Stay tuned for Bob Inyart Live. But first, hi, I'm Pastor Bob Inyart with our Denver Bible Church update. I've got my Bible here open to Genesis chapter 1. And Doug McBurney and I were talking about this just a week ago, where Genesis 1 verse 1 says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." And that's such a simple statement to begin the Bible. And there's no other major religion in the world, is there any religion in the world, that has a book, a Bible, a scripture that takes you back from the beginning and traces all of human history from the beginning, from the first two people, their names, and where they were created, and through until modern times, i.e. the time of Christ. And so the Bible tells us where we came from, and that we came from God, that God created us. And interestingly, it's not until you get into the New Testament that you could really get some specifics about the Godhead, that our Creator is a Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. You get hints of it in the Old Testament, but it comes together much more clearly in the New. But in the very first verse of Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." What's so fascinating is that Moses used the plural form of God. The word for God in Hebrew is El or Elah, and the plural form of God is Elohim, plural, like cherub is an angel, right? And a seraph is an angel, but cherubim means angels, and seraphim means angels. Well, this here, "In the beginning, Elohim," gods, plural, then a singular verb, "He created the heavens and the earth." What's with that? Moses is eloquent. He's very literate. Would he make a grammatical error, the kind that a second grade teacher would mark off for? Well, at least in a private school or homeschool. And the first line of his book that's to be the word of God? No, he didn't make a grammatical error. From the very beginning, the Bible tells us about God that the Godhead is a plurality, that there is one God. There is one God is the emphasis of course, Judaism and the writings of Moses. And as Moses quotes God in his writings, the Lord is one. There is one God, yet he exists in three persons, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. So Moses wrote that in the beginning, God's, he created the heavens and the earth. And then as you get down into the chapter, God says, "Let us make man," verse 26. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image." Isn't that so interesting? Then God said, "Let us make man in our image." So, of course, the Jews should be somewhat understanding of the Christian emphasis on the plurality in the Godhead, because their books of Moses begin with presenting God in a plurality. And it's not until later, we have hints through the Bible, like later in Genesis, at the time when God is going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, that we read that Jehovah on earth, because the angel of the Lord came down to earth, and that would be Jesus Christ and God's representation to men. And the angel of the Lord came down, and Jehovah on earth called down judgment from Jehovah in heaven. And so we have in the Bible a presentation of God. And doesn't that then help us to grope with the concept of, well, what did God do for all of eternity before creation? Before creation, when he's all alone forever, eternally in the past, what did he do? Well, the most wonderful thing, the greatest thing in all of existence is relationship. And because God is a Godhead, the Trinity, he was able to relate Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So that's what he did, and that's what we'll be doing. Now, stay tuned for Bob Inyart Live. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular, self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. O'Reilly tonight had Alan Keyes on, followed by Jennifer O'Neill. And Alan Keyes is a former ambassador to the United Nations from the U.S., and he's strongly pro-life, which, of course, we love about him, against abortion. And Jennifer O'Neill was, for 30 years, she was a cover girl for all these ladies' magazines, 30 years a cover girl. She was a big Hollywood movie actress, star, starred in at least one or some of the biggest movies, classics, even though they might be terrible, but many years ago. And she had had an abortion. Anyway, Alan Keyes was asked by Aurelia O'Reilly, asked him, well, of the Democratic candidates, the ones seeking their party's nomination for president, do you find anything of value in any of them? And he said, no. And that was so great. He said, no. Because the first question I asked, he said, even though I'm a Republican, he said, if a Republican asked me for support, the first question I ask is, where do you stand on abortion? Because if you don't respect innocent life, if you're willing to say, I'm going to let people kill unborn children, then you're disqualified. And he said, they're all pro-abortion, so I don't need to know anything more. And they're also liberal. They support homosexuality, and they're socialist. And so at any rate, Alan Keyes, he did a good job on abortion, of course. On homosexuality, it's my observation that the average conservative, even the conservative Christian who is asked about this in public, well, two observations. First off, they don't bring it up. They have to be forced into dealing with it, conservative Christians. They don't because, you know, we're to love our neighbor, and so we may want to tell our neighbor. We may want it to be our issue to warn people that homosexuality is destructive. It will destroy you. We need to protect people from it, and it's wrong. So conservative Christians generally, if they're in the media for some reason, they're not the ones to bring it up unless their hand is forced. But then if they do bring it up, it seems to me, and that Alan Keyes, even though he's so eloquent and powerful, he was not compelling on the issue of homosexuality. Because with abortion, he points out, it's morally wrong to kill an innocent child. It's wrong. That's a strong position. That's strong. You might want to argue, well, it's not morally wrong because, or there's no such thing as morality, but that's a strong position. On homosexuality, because he didn't go for the moral position that homosexuality is wrong, it's destructive, God condemns it, it's wrong, it destroys people. He tried the nicer, gentler approach, which is marriage is the foundation of society, and therefore marriage makes sure that people meet their obligations to children and marriage. And Aurelia O'Reilly kept saying, hey, but homosexuals will say, we do that too. We raise children. We pay taxes. And really, when you're coming from that nicer and gentler position that Alan Keyes was coming from, you lose the moral force of your argument. You're just trying to make a pragmatic argument why homosexuals shouldn't be allowed to marry. Instead of saying that homosexuality is perverse, it's destructive, it not only destroys the individuals that embrace it, but the society that does, and God condemns it, it's unnatural, it leads to depression, disease, it's bad all around. And Alan Keyes was asked by Aurelia O'Reilly, asked him, well, don't you know good homosexual people? Don't you know homosexual people who are good? And Alan Keyes didn't answer the question. He evaded it. And it would have been great. But maybe, you know, he's still interested in politics, maybe, whatever it is. It would have been great for him to say, no, I don't, because people who are homosexuals are giving in to the base elements of the human animal. It's like saying, well, don't you know any good drug dealers who sell drugs to kids? No, I don't. No, because what they're doing means they're not good. It's bad. It's bad. And being a child killer, Alan Keyes, don't you know any good abortionists? So you could have said, Bill, that's like asking me if I know any good abortionists. No, by definition, what they're doing is wrong. So you can't be good if you're advocating doing wrong. So anyway, that's my observations on the homosexual issue, and that Christians are pretty much conservatives, and conservative Christians are afraid of the issue, and they will speak up only when they're forced to, when it's put right in their face. And then we're generally weak. Now, George W. Bush might be able to get a constitutional amendment passed outlawing homosexual marriage. That could be. But that's a far cry. That'll be argued on grounds. That'll be argued in ways that will make homosexuals sound like the saviors of the world, except for we need marriage to remain heterosexual. But other than that, homosexuals are God's gift to mankind. That's the way that amendment will be passed, if it's passed. And that's destructive. That hurts people. All right. Oh, and then Jennifer O'Neill, she was on Next specifically to speak against abortion. And she had had one many years ago. And she is now an outspoken anti-abortion activist. And she's really neat. Colorado Rights of Life had her come in and speak at their annual banquet in, was it September? What a fabulous banquet it was. It was extraordinary. And I think it raised enough money to get that great TV commercial there's airing. It's aired over 500 times now, where the kids are in a playground. No, kids are in a studio, and they're singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat. 20 million killed. And row, row, row your boat, 30 million killed, 40 million killed. And every time they come back to the kids, the camera, and there are fewer kids singing. It's a devastating commercial. It's so good against abortion. You know, but they sang Row, Row, Row v. Wade, 20 million killed. It was good. Excellent. It's an excellent commercial. But she spoke at that banquet. And we had brought a few tables to the banquet, Bob and Yurt Live in Denver Bible Church. I think three tables. I forget. Some couple tables, three tables. And so we were able to talk with Ms. O'Neill. And one of the things I mentioned to her was a little bit awkward. But, well, see what you think. After this break, I'll let you know what we talked about and see if you'd agree.
At Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or KGOV.com.
Bob Inyart here with a live commercial break. Last month, we, you know, people subscribe to our Bible studies, our sermons, our videos, monthly videos, and they get them in the mail once a month. And some people, you know, have stayed with us for years on that. And every once in a while, we lose people if they lose a job. We've had a few people die on us. That was really rude. But we try to keep the number of monthly subscriptions sort of steady, and it's neat if it grows a bit. And last month it grew. That's all right. It wasn't that funny. Stop making me laugh. I got to do a commercial. We got to pay the bills. Last month, our monthly subscribers grew by 6. That's not a lot. We're not a big ministry. We're a small ministry, but we're determined to get the word out, the word of God. And one of the ways you can help us, of course, is by considering our Bible study materials, videos, our audio tapes, as we study through the books of the Bible. But the best way is to get a subscription to a monthly Bible study album. Once a month, you get an album in the mail, $34.95. And we're not getting married. You're just subscribing to an album. So if you're not tickled pink, you could cancel it. There's no prenuptial agreement or anything required. It's just $34.95 a month. Give us a call, 800-8-NYART, or go online to our store at kgov.com. All right, so Jennifer O'Neill, I got to chat with her the night of the banquet, the Colorado Right to Life banquet, and her talk was extraordinary. And there's no way that someone could have done a better job. I mean, there are a million ways to do a great job at presenting an important truth, but nobody could have done a better job, but maybe a lot of people could have done a fabulous job. She was extraordinary. And in pointing out the moral and spiritual and emotional devastation of child killing, she was just extraordinary. She was great. And I was very thankful, of course, for what a great job she did. But I wanted to talk to her privately, and we did, just briefly, about the presentation in her promo materials for her career. And she'd been a cover girl for 30 years. I mean, month in and month out, it was her face on the Seven Sisters, the magazines, Glamour, and whatever they are. I never read them, obviously. But whatever they are, they tell you what color to do your fingernails, and I don't know what they tell you. And that was back when they were not so despicable. I'm sure they weren't great, but today such magazines are pretty despicable, I guess. But her promo material talked about one movie that she starred in, which really probably made her career. It became a classic, and I'm not even going to tell you what the movie was. But that movie, I remember that movie from when I was young, and that movie was so destructive for so many millions of men and young men. It was just a sexually seductive movie. Of the most devastating kind. It was terrible. It wasn't like a XXX porn video, obviously. It was a major release in some decades ago, but it was utterly destructive. And so I said to Jennifer O'Neill, I said, Jennifer, I'm sure now that you are such a strong Christian, I'm sure you have the wisdom to know that that movie that you starred in was utterly destructive to millions of men. It really helped to harm them and their ability to live pure before God, to honor their wives, their girlfriends. And she said, well, if I had it to do over again, she said, obviously, as a Christian, I would never make that movie. And I said, right, I'm sure that's true. And I said, well, just as you present that you've had an abortion and you don't say it was a great thing you did, it was a terrible thing. In your resume, in your promotional materials, you may mention that you were in this movie, but it should be put in the proper light. Not that it was a great thing, not that you won an Academy Award, but that this was one of the destructive things I did to hurt me, to lower my own self-image, because here I am, supposedly a sophisticated woman appearing in a movie like this, and then eventually I kill my own child. It's all part of the same war, the same spiritual war, and you were losing. And your child eventually lost the most. And so anyway, I want to encourage you, when you mention that in your promotional materials or your resume, to put it in the right perspective, that I did this, but it was destructive. And she said, I agree. That's what she said. She agreed. And I was glad to hear that. I assumed she would agree. How could she not agree? But it's tough. You know, in Christianity is tough because God's standard is pretty high. And we all live on the world here, in the world, and the world's standard is despicable. In the world, I mean that literally, you have to be despicable to be approved of. And if you're godly, you will be hated. That's what Jesus Christ said, that if they hated me, he said, they will hate you, because the truth is unavoidably offensive. And so it's really a pain in the neck to try to take God's standard and make it a part of your life and build an environment where Christians expect one another to encourage, to confront, to rebuke one another when necessary. That's hard to do. It's easier just to blow people off and say, oh, so what? That's easier. And, you know, Christians, like all people, generally want to be liked, at least most of them. And so when you're going to challenge someone or confront them, it's a bit painful. And of course, we could go the wrong way in that also and just become so confrontational that it's just in the flesh and we just enjoy criticizing people and that's all we do. And so that's a problem on the other side. But anyway, God's standard of righteousness is pretty straightforward. And it's usually easy to figure out when we're blowing it or not. Pretty easy. But it's hard to speak up. All right. Hey, the economy, what makes the economy go round? What makes it go round? You know, people who listen to this show, you guys have an obligation to be the brightest audience in the country. So what makes the economy go round? Well, it's serving one another. When we serve one another, that's what makes the economy go round, right? The Bible, to the extent that cultures embrace the teachings of the Word of God, to that extent, they will prosper. Meaning, if you work hard, if a society has a lot of crime, well, the more crime it has, the less it will prosper. And if a society works hard, the more hard work in the society, the more people serve one another, the more the economy will grow. And so in Europe, you know, the EU, we call it the U here. We call it the U, just like the UN and the U. In the year 2000, the U said that they were going to overtake the United States economy by the year 2010. And so we're some years into that, right? 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003. So we're 4-5 years into that. And now, how are they doing? Are they halfway toward overtaking us? How are they doing? Now, what would happen if the U became a stronger economic powerhouse than America? Would that be good or bad? Well, that'd be great because you want people to prosper. You don't want them to be poor. And you just don't want people poor. You want them to be able to afford a good place to live, nice clothes, a way to travel, and health care and vacation. You want people to be able to afford those things, but you can't give them to people because when you give those things to people, they lose their motivation to serve others. Like, what if the government said, okay, this is what we're going to do. we're going to give everyone $1 million. Oh, good. So then the first thing everyone does is take off for 2 months. So where are you going to go? The hotel? Nobody's there working. Go to a restaurant to do what? To look at it? Can't go skiing. Can't get gas. Can't fix your car. Can't buy a boat. Nobody made a boat. So the government can't give. The more the government gives things to people, the more the government hurts the economy. But liberals are stupid, so they don't know that. And that's a fundamental truth of all throughout time. Liberals are stupid. And so they don't know that when the government gives things to people, the government hurts the economy. Because the economy is when people serve one another. And so let's say somebody out there wants to subscribe. Now, this is a self-serving example. They want to subscribe to the monthly Bible study album, Bob and Yurt Live, $34.95 a month. And they really, you know, they sort of get by every month, but they don't make much money, and they don't work all that many hours, and they're maybe a single guy, and he goofs off a lot, plays more video games than works. But he really starts listening to the show, and he said, you know, I'd like to get that $34.95 a month. I never spent that kind of money on anything other than Taco Bell and video games. I don't know if I could afford that. But he thinks, boy, I really want to get that. Well, then what will I have to do? I'll actually have to work harder. And so when you get things, like my wife wants to put up a fence. Well, you put up a fence, what's that cost? A few thousand dollars. So as far as I know, no one is going to give us a fence. So I have to work harder to get the money so that she could put up a fence. And that's how the economy works. By serving, the Bible says, serve one another. And when we serve one another, the economy grows. And when we don't, the economy doesn't grow. So if Europe became this economic powerhouse and was serving us by building goods, products that we wanted to buy here in America, and the whole world wanted Europe's products, you know, in some ways they do, like Nokia and other products, but great. That's good. I'd rather my middle class or poor neighbors become rich neighbors, because poor people create very few jobs, right? I don't know too many poor people that have hired 100 people. Well, I'm poor, but I'm going to help the economy and hire 100 people. I can't pay you anything, but come on to work. We'll have fun. Whereas rich people, they can be a blessing, economically speaking, to those around them because they want things because they're rich. In order to get things, they produce more economic activity. And so the U now has been at this for a few years, and according to the Associated Press, well, they're quoting the European Commission President Romano Prodi, said the European Union nations are dragging their heels in their ambitious drive to become the world's most competitive economy by the end of the decade, according to the EU. The EU said Europe is falling further behind the United States. Last year, European job growth evaporated, public finances deteriorated, and the average unemployment rate rose to over 8%. The president of the EU said that the nations in Europe's nations do not seem to realize that 2010 is right around the corner. We need to get going. They need to get going, of course, but they don't know what direction. They don't know what it means to get going. They don't know how to improve their economy. They don't know what it means. To the extent that their economy may improve, it's an accident. It's by accident. And sadly, we have a lot of that here in our government, right here. Bob Enyard here. Hey, have you listened to Tony Funderburk's Do Right CD? You'll love it. You'll enjoy it. You can get that from us right here at kgov.com or 800-8-ENYARD. But Tony also, he's got the greatest music for kids, little kids. It's CustomKidsSongs.com. These CDs are so great because whatever name you got, a kid or a grandkid, a baby's born, first, second, third, fourth, fifth birthday, sixth birthday, you order from Tony with the name of your kid or grandkid or friend, and you get a CD where the songs are all sung to your kid with his name or her name. Now, this is fun. This Tony Funderburk's music, you know, we've offered his Do Right CD for a long time, $15.95. You get it from Bubba Neert Live. But Tony has another business, which is fabulous. It's called CustomKidsSongs.com. And Custom Kids Songs is so much fun because we've got Tony's CDs for all our kids in their names, like Zachary and Michael and Dominic and Shawnee. No, not Sean. My nephew's getting married. He's too old for that. But Tony Funderburk sings these songs to each kid. The whole CD is to your kid. So for our Zachary, he's got one of the songs on there is Zachary's Busy Day. Hey, 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 Zachary's Busy Day. It's so cute. I can't sing. But then after we listen to the entire CD, say we're on a trip, we're in the van or we're driving around town, we listen to all the songs to Zachary, then Michael says, I want to hear Michael's Busy Day. So then we pop out Zachary's Busy Day, put in Michael's Busy Day. And then Dominic, who's 2 years old, says, Dominic Busy Day, Dominic Busy Day. And you just got to check this out. It is so excellent. You can get it online at CustomKidsSongs.com. And you'll love them. They're fabulous gifts. one 800 8 NYART, 1-800-836-9278. So the U is doing their best to confuse themselves. And, you know, America and Britain were the two major powers in the war to destroy Saddam Hussein's tyrannical government. And we, of course, defeated his regime very rapidly and his army, and now we're mopping up, which is difficult. But in The Hague, in Europe, they have the International Criminal Court, the ICC. And so the ICC is now saying that they need further investigation to determine whether or not to charge Britain with war crimes for the war against Iraq because they dropped cluster bombs. Cluster bombs. Now, cluster bombs are used when you want to kill a lot of the enemy soldiers. Now, if you don't want to kill them, you could drop other things like leaflets or Red Cross packages, Hershey's chocolate bars. You might kill them with diabetes eventually. But if you don't want to kill them, you could drop all kinds of things. But if you want to kill them, you drop bombs. And cluster bombs are effective because they break apart and then they have hundreds of additional little bomblets that blow up. So you could take out a football field size area of enemy troops with a cluster bomb. It's very effective. And when you go to war, the goal is to kill people and break things. That's the goal of war. So if you're killing a lot of people and breaking a lot of things, then you're effectively waging war. And so in the EU, at The Hague, at the IC, the ICC, they're saying that they need further study to determine whether Britain should be charged with a war crime. Now, of course, we used cluster bombs too, right? Yeah, we use cluster bombs. We're not stupid. Are we stupid? Well, we want to go to war, but we don't want to kill too many of the enemy soldiers because we want to give them a fair shot at us. You know, liberals are stupid. Do you ever hear that before? Has that ever come up in conversation? Liberals are stupid. And so Professor Bill Bowring of the London Metropolitan University who was involved with this investigation, said this, and this is reported by Reuters. He said that, well, there is a considerable amount of evidence of disproportionate use of force. Well, no kidding. We won the war. They lost. I mean, if they would have used more force than us, chances are they might have won. You blithering idiot. And so, of course, he goes on to talk about civilian casualties, and civilian casualties are tragic. But has there ever been a war fought where there's been more attention paid to care not to hurt civilians? I mean, this war was extreme in that effort compared to all wars to date. So at any rate, and who is it that has enabled these wars to be fought with fewer civilian casualties? Was it the liberals, or was it the conservatives that were advocating and pushing for the development of better munitions, better bombs? Right? It's us. We are the good guys who said, let's build better bombs. Let's be able to target them. Let's use GPS. The reason the whole world has GPS, so new age environmental wacko can find his girlfriend up in the middle of a mountain hike somewhere, is because conservatives wanted the Pentagon to be able to drive cruise missiles right through somebody's front door. And so we've got this global positioning satellite system. And, oh, by the way, it helps you find your car when it's stolen. That's good. One of the nice side effects of military research, R&D. So at any rate, that's the kind of thinking at the EU. You've got Saddam Hussein responsible for 1 million violent deaths, according to the front page of the New York Times, 1 million violent deaths. And America and Britain, and now along with the help of dozens of other countries, stop him, and they want to go after us. But we couldn't go after him. We couldn't go after Saddam. Why not? Well, I guess he didn't violate any of these Hague laws. I guess they never went after Saddam, but they'll go after Britain. All right. All right, what else is in the news? The divorce rate. So we're talking a lot about the place of America in the world and foreign countries. There's an article that compares the divorce rate in America with that of other countries. In fact, I made reference to this on the show, I think last night when I was commenting on Bush's State of the Union address. And I do have to say that at least the State of the Union was not address. It was a State of the Union address, because not too many years ago when Bill Clinton gave his speech, it was the State of their Union address, because that's what the whole country was talking about, one particular blue dress. But at any rate, so things have been cleaned up somewhat in the White House. But so I mentioned that America leads the West in divorce rate. And I actually don't have a comprehensive study to that effect, but this was what was in my mind. This report out by the Associated Press that the divorce rate is given by cases per 1,000 people. All right, so cases per 1,000 people. For example, in Italy, it's less than one divorce per 1,000 people. In France, it's more than double that, to just about two divorces per 1,000 people. So two divorces means four people per year. In Japan, Sweden, and Germany, it's about 2.5 divorces per 1,000 people. In Denmark, it's, and England, it's closer to three. And in the U.S., it's four. Four divorces per 1,000 people. Now, that might not sound like too many, but four divorces per 1,000 people, that's eight people in 1,000 in 1 year. So in 10 years, that's 80, right? And people live to be how old these days? Married people live to be late 70s, 80 years old. So figure 50 years of marriage, possibly five decades. So 80 people per 10 years times five. Now, follow me on this. That's 400 people. So out of 1,000 people, 400 of them will have experienced divorce in your lifetime out of 1,000 people. And that's obviously far too many. Now, not all people get married, right? Not everyone is married. So it's actually higher than 40% then. But you know what's interesting? In these other countries, marriage is even less respected than it is here in the U.S. and some of these countries. So part of their low divorce rate could be because there's such a huge number of people not marrying, just shacking up. But, of course, that's happening here in this country, and maybe the divorce rate will go down as people increasingly shack up. That's like when statistics are used by people deceptively, and you could show, like you could statistics can show anything. They say, like, for example, if you measure the viscosity of tar on the road, that can predict the crime rate. Like the harder the road, the less crime, and the softer the road, the more crime. Do you know that? Yeah, all over. Yeah, it's true. Of course, it has nothing to do with how hard or soft the road is. It has to do with the temperature, because in the summer, there's more crime than the winter because criminals are tired and lazy, and they don't like to go out when it's cold. And so weather affects crime significantly. And there's less crime early in the morning because liberals are still in bed. Well, not liberals, but criminals. Well, same thing. Well, not always. But so anyway, statistics, of course, are can be dangerous. But what we see generally is that the respect for marriage is under a tremendous assault. And divorce obviously doesn't only hurt the two people. We had out of 1,000 people, the 400 during your life. But how about the kids who suffer, and the in-laws, and the relatives, and the bosses who lose employees, and the bankruptcies, and the foreclosures, and on and on? So what is it that most helps Bob and your life stay on the air? What is it? Watching O'Reilly? No. It's the subscriptions. And that's the neatest way for you to enjoy our teaching materials. Now, people learn differently. Some people are more visual. They like to watch videos. Other people are auditory learners. They like to listen. Some people like to read. And so in our catalog, what a nice catalog it is, four color. We've come into the 1940s with this. We've really made a major leap forward. But we've got our audio section, video, and literature. And under literature, for example, we've got the plot, the manuscript, unpublished manuscript. It's my life's work. It's an overview of the Bible, and we submit here, we believe that the overview of the Bible is the key to its details, that once you understand the overall story of the Bible, you will be able to confidently deal with thousands of details. But when you don't really, when you're not confident about the whole story, how does the whole book fit together? What's the plot of the Bible? The major events, how do they tie together? Most people, most Christians don't know. And so that's the plot. The overview of the Bible is the key to the details. That's a 330-page manuscript. Is that right? Yeah, something like that. $49.95 plus shipping and handling, which for that is how much? $550? Yeah, or you can get the plot on audio tape or MP3, CD-ROM. And we think you'll love it. We think you will absolutely love it. And if not, we have a 30-day money-back guarantee on everything. So you support this show, you get an exciting new take on the Bible, and what else can you ask for? Bob Enyart here, 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. Executions in Lebanon, good news in the Middle East. In Beirut, Lebanon has started executing people again. Good news. Three convicted murderers were put to death. For 5 years, Lebanon didn't execute anyone. They didn't impose the death penalty. And now it's back, thankfully. If the death penalty was going to be against the law in our entire country, and it could only be effective, it could only be enforced for just one family, and it was up to you to pick the family, not that that family would be put to death, but if anyone in that family, say, murdered or kidnapped, they'd be put to death. Which family should you select? If the death penalty was outlawed nationwide and it could only be effective for one family, which family would you select? There is a right answer to that question, and I'm not going to tell you what it is. You have to think it out. 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. So anyway, Lebanon now has started executing people. If they're convicted in their criminal courts, then they're hanged in Lebanon. By the way, public school teachers tuning in, Lebanon is a country in the Middle East. It's on the Mediterranean. It's north of Israel. Syria dominates much of the politics of Lebanon. All right, and if they're executing someone who was convicted not by in a criminal court but by a military court, then they're executed by firing squad. So either hanged or firing squad, and either is fine. Either one is fine. In Afghanistan, this past weekend, we had a second barrage of rocket attacks near a U.S. base in eastern Afghanistan, the second one in 3 days. And it's pretty good. The rockets slammed into a field near one of our air bases. And we've got a Lieutenant Colonel Brian Hilferty out there who said, luckily, the enemy's aim is as bad as their political beliefs. And that was good. We're glad that they had bad aim in that instance. And Afghanistan is going to continue to be difficult also. But it's worth the fight. It's worth the war on terror. By the way, do you know Reuters will not use the term war on terror? They won't say that. They won't even call Osama bin Laden a terrorist. They think that's too judgmental. Is that wacko or what? That's Reuters. Hey, we're living in a wicked world. Speaking of terrorism, did you hear the story in Sweden, Stockholm, where the Israeli ambassador to Sweden was kicked out of a museum? Now, that's weird when an ambassador is kicked out of a museum because he vandalized one of the exhibits. And this is an interesting story. And then after that, It was an exhibit having to do with a Palestinian terrorist, suicide bomber. And after he was kicked, he vandalized it. It was a big pool of water with a boat floating in the pool. And he took lamps and threw them in the pool. And, you know, obviously that's one way to disrupt the exhibit. And I don't know if he tipped the boat over or what he did. But and then Ariel Sharon, the prime minister of Israel, commended the ambassador for vandalizing the exhibit. And the exhibit was this. It was a pool of water that was dyed to look like blood. And it really did look like blood. And I know fake blood, and that was good-looking fake blood. A big pool of blood is what it looked like. And there was a pool, there was a small boat floating in the pool, and it had a sail, but the sail was a photograph of a woman who was a Palestinian terrorist who had killed 21 people in a, what did she blow herself up in? Was it a cafe? It was back in October of 2003. So at any rate, she killed 21 people. And the artist is Jewish, Jewish-born artist. But he's against the government in Israel. So he's obviously much more willing to consider the terrorist position. And the artist and Sweden are arguing that this display was not approving of terrorism. In fact, they said, look at it, had her floating on a pool of blood. But the display was titled Snow White. It's titled Snow White. It's a very complimentary photograph of the terrorist suicide bomber, the Palestinian terrorist. And the display is certainly, it's ambiguous. It's ambiguous. Like, did she come to this because of all the blood of her relatives or friends or compatriots that have been shed? Or is she a murderer? Is she being glorified? Can you interpret it in different ways? Yes, you can. You can. And that's despicable. That's what makes it despicable. Nothing dealing with murder of innocent people, intentional murder of innocent people, should be ambiguous. And that's what made it despicable. And of course, Sweden is defending the exhibit, and the ambassador was glad he destroyed it, and Ariel Sharon, the prime minister in Israel, complimented him for doing a good job of it. So that's a rather colorful news story to come out of a horrifying circumstance. All right, what else do we have in the news? Boy, the show's almost over. Where did the show go? Where did the time go? Well, let me end with this. Of all that heavy stuff and now this, the low-carb phenomenon. Now, I've been flirting with low-carb eating for 2 years now. And how many Americans are formally on low-carb diets? 17 million. How many Americans are there? Approaching 300 million. How many Americans are consciously trying to reduce their carbs, their carbohydrates? 60 million. That is phenomenal. That is so wild. 60 million. Now, public school teachers, what percentage of the population is that? Quick, 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 quick. All right, we know you can't figure it out. That's 1 out of 5 people, but most infants aren't trying to reduce their carbs, right? Most kids up to 10 years old are not trying to reduce their carbs, and they make up a significant portion of our population. So it's really a lot more than 20%. If you take out, you know, prisoners, and there's, 2 million of them, and kids up to 15 years old or so. So it's a significant percent of the adult population is actively trying to reduce their carbs. And, you know, I want to make a prediction that the epidemic of juvenile diabetes in America, the epidemic of juvenile diabetes is going to have there's going to be a major improvement in the lives of kids who would have been diagnosed as diabetic by the year 2010. Forget about the EU and the ick at The Hague, whatever they do. Forget them. They'll be struggling. They'll be confused. They don't know which way they're going. They don't know how to do right or wrong. They don't know what right or wrong is. But in America, you see, when the federal government told Americans to go on a low-fat diet 30-some years ago, when they did that, they had no scientific evidence that a low-fat diet would lead to better health. There was none. There was none. And it was a political move by a Democratic senator who was a fool. And he was warned in committee by testimony that there's no evidence that a low-fat diet will be good for people's health. And it turns out that it's not. As a general rule, it's a bad idea, low-fat diet. Because, you know, you have fats and proteins and carbohydrates. And simple carbohydrates, when you eat them, they immediately turn into sugar. That's what they turn into. So the baked potato with all the sour cream and the chives and all butter on it, oozing with butter. And people for 30 years have said, oh, I just have to have the baked potato. I really want all that good, fulfilling stuff, but I just have to, just give me a dry baked potato. Don't even cook it too much. And so that white potato turns instantly to sugar because it's simple carbs. You could have eaten the stuff on top of it, just skip the baked potato. Have all the butter and sour cream you want. Just skip the baked potato. Maybe just eat the skin and all the sour cream. But so we ate, how much white rice did we eat and baked potato and white flour, right, and sugars in the name of a low-fat diet, and that stuff all turns to sugar, which your body stores as fat when it doesn't need it, and so Americans became plump. And we have about 4,000 different food products. They all say low-fat, low-fat, low-fat for fat people, low-fat for fat people. And it made us fat. It made us fat, and it gave how many kids diabetes so that we have an epidemic? We never had juveniles get diabetes. Now we have juvenile diabetes in epidemic numbers. And so my prediction is that by 2010, because there will be 1,000 low-carb products on the market, that people can eat their vegetables and their meats and their complex carbohydrates and whole grains, and not white potatoes so much, rarely. My prediction is that juvenile diabetes, we could take major strides toward battling it. Major. And so Atkins, Dr. Atkins, he had to die, huh, before his diet became a phenomenon? It's like an artist. It's like an author. You mean I have to die before the plot gets published? That might be the case. All right, we'll find out. If that's the case, when I get to heaven, I'm going to have it out with some of those publishers. Hey, we're out of time. Where'd the show go? This is Bob Benyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.